just for you, sir, on your computer. It's not about the future, but it's all the way from Utah. No matter where you're from, you can download This Week in Mormons. Join Jeff and Al and round up your pals to bring a jello salad as you listen to my ballad. I promise you won't get bored as they talk more and more and more and more and more and more, more and more and more and more and more about Mormons.
Stay with us, everyone. It's time for This Week in Mormons. We're here. We're so happy to be here. Thank you for being here. And we're going to talk about
why wouldn't they stay with us, Jeff? We just started.
You never know.
We just started.
You never know. I feel like I have to preemptively beg them in case you say something offensive. I have to just.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair.
Just remember the time.
Hello. Thanks for listening. Please don't go.
Just saying. I care about our people. I don't want anything to happen to them. It would be a shame. An absolute shame.
You censor me, Jeff Openshaw. You censor me.
I do no such thing.
I'm a man with a vision and a foul mouth, and I like to be heard.
I mean, from time to time, I might edit what you say, but
I don't call that censoring.
That's not censoring. That's just creative excising of superfluous material. Sometimes, though, Al, I censor myself when I edit the show.
No,
I will listen
what
back.
What would you take out?
We might record and there'll be, I don't know, some kind of an exchange with which I was not wildly pleased, or I thought it was pointless. I didn't like my delivery.
What?
And if it's not necessary for the show, I'll just yank it out. Yeah.
No. Yeah. You've been making yourself look good this whole time?
I make you look good too, Al.
No, you definitely do not make me look good. If there is a chance that I say something stupid, you'll loop it and make a ringtone out of it. There is nothing in you that protects my.
I will embrace 2006 and even make a callback tone with it.
2006? What does that mean?
I don't know. Before, smartphones, you know. Remember back in the day with an iPhone when Apple didn't even let you create your own MP3s and set them as ringtones? Do they still not let you do that? I have no idea.
What are you talking about? Like back when they had headphone jacks and stuff?
Yeah, you know, back in the day. Well, when the iPhone first came out, Apple didn't give you any kind of system access. So if you had like a little 30-second MP3 that you wanted to set as a ringtone, you couldn't do it. You had to buy ringtones from the
Understand, there's still no file system. You could not just navigate and choose a song as your ringtone, Jeff.
So you can't customize ringtones on your iPhone?
You can customize them, just not to the degree that you would want.
Not to the degree I can on Android, is what you're saying.
See, in 2016, we realized that you either you are like a buffoon in society, or you have a dang normal phone sound as your ringtone, or nothing.
Yeah, pretty much.
I haven't taken my phone off silent in 2 years. it doesn't buzz, nothing.
That's why you can
never get a hold of me.
That's why I'm always confused about our conversations. I'm like, well, where'd this go? We were just texting. Like, does he not know that I'm – what? Now I know. I'm so happy about it.
No, I opted for when I want to be on my phone – I will be on my phone, and then I do not get interrupted. I don't let you interrupt my dinner conversation. The things that I want to be doing, I don't let you interrupt me with your phone just because you're on the phone. No, my life, I dictate where I'm looking. I dictate, Jeff.
All right, whatever helps you sleep at night there, pal. I don't believe it for a second, but okay.
Whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
You don't know me.
You don't
How's your week,
me.
Man? Where are you right now? You're in a hotel. You're in a Hampton Inn.
I might or might not be in a Hampton Inn. This brand.
It's my favorite hotel chain.
Owned by the Hiltons. You get a breakfast here. It's amazing. They give you a breakfast.
The most predictable bed you'll ever have.
Yeah, I'm not as in love. You like the beds a lot, huh? You're a big fan?
I'm not a huge fan. I like them okay.
But they're predictable. They're predictably average. That should be their motto.
Adequacy, Hampton Inn.
I'm in a Hampton Inn. The big disappointment's been the shower, actually. The shower has unfortunate water pressure levels. They could do a lot more with the shower.
I just bought a feather pillow topper for my mattress here in Missouri. And let me tell you, Jeff. It's like a warm hug every night. I slept on it once, and it is delightful.
I have a down allergy, so that just would not work for me. That would be bad.
No, you're allergic to everything.
I'm not allergic to everything, but yeah, down pillows and stuff, I'll usually get a little itchy, so I avoid them.
Allergic to hay?
Do you not remember what happened to me when I was in Missouri visiting you once? Do you not remember?
Yeah, no, your life is a perpetual moaning about the things that you're allergic to. You're a bubble boy.
I suppose I am. You know, it's different biomes, right? I grew up in Southern California. Them Rocky Mountains, that desert, it's a totally different ecosystem. You know, I'm impervious to things like smog and other irritants. But if you want to talk about nature, nature just ruins it for me. I can't handle it. It's very sad. Pollen everywhere. Well, hay.
Oh. And you're just in the Hampton Inn for work, right?
My wife and I were fighting, actually. And so here I am. I'm hanging out here for the week, trying to lay low.
Boy, what's that like? The rich version of sleeping on the couch. You go get a hotel.
I get a hotel. I go to the Hampton.
If I could afford that, I'd still be married. You know what I'm saying?
Anyway,
you know
what I'm saying? Now I'm down in North Carolina for work. So I'm hanging out in Fayetteville, folks. Anybody's ever hung out at Fort Bragg, that's what I'm doing all week. Party, right? Yeah. You know what I'm saying. No, it's not.
I don't know what you're saying.
Fayetteville's a terrible city. It has few redeeming features. It's nothing but strip malls and actual malls. And
this reminds me a lot of Phoenix.
Yeah, pretty much. Just kind of dirty. I don't know. You know, southern cities as far as strip mall stuff are a little bit different from, I don't know, other ones. There's a distinction. I don't know how to explain it, but there's just a difference to them. The streets in suburban South kind of look the same.
Oh. Yeah, but, no, that sounds like every city.
In a way, but there's something different about it. I can't quite explain it, but I've always noticed it in the time I've lived on the East Coast, getting into real Virginia, not where I live, and then through the Carolinas and stuff. There's just something distinctive. It's a little bit different. And especially
a little character to it, like in a good way, right?
Yeah, sure. It's not like it's got Southern charm or anything. It's just Fayetteville. Woohoo. So, but there's a distinction, because I was in Philadelphia on Monday, and the same thing when you get into some of the suburbs of Philly, some of the what would be the analog to this? It's different, though. There's a different just kind of style to it. It could be because it's more industrial in the Northeast. I'm not sure. But, you know, the agrarian South, that's why they lost the war, of course. So, anyway, that's what I'm doing. I did go to Philadelphia, though, on Monday. We checked out the temple, finally. So I have a full report on the Philadelphia Temple open house. Oh, you want the report now?
Yeah, let's hear it. How was it? Was it great?
It was very good. The temple feels smaller on the inside than it looks on the outside, which was interesting to me. Usually, I feel like it's different. I was just surprised by that. When we first went in during the open house, even the entry lobby where they check your recommend and such, I was kind of predicting a bit of a longer corridor, one of those deals. It was a very short room. I don't know. It just felt a little bit tighter than I predicted. It was very nice on the inside and everything. So that was just the main thing that stuck out. Smaller than I thought it would be. And it was very pleasant. I really enjoyed a lot of the artwork that they have. That's probably one of the coolest things about it. There was a lot of very, very interesting and beautiful artwork all throughout.
Made it sound awful.
Wasn't awful. It was good.
Short corridor, please. I'll never go there.
It was a short corridor. You basically walk in the front door and then you have probably no more than 10 feet from the front door to the desk where they check your recommend. It's not a lot of space. It's very snug. But it's nice. A lot of wood floors, which is cool. Rugs everywhere and nice details. The chandeliers were cool. But even the celestial room also felt smaller than I thought. The celestial room was really not much bigger, if at all, than those in like Newport Beach and some of those smaller temples like that. And as I was there, I realized a lot of the way the floor plan was done, the upper level where you would do a session, it's not like they had multiple ordinance rooms that fed into the celestial room. You just had the style they do nowadays where you have, you know, the one starting room and then you go to one more room and then the celestial room, the three-room approach. That one set of them, very similar in dimensions even to a temple smaller like Newport. So I think really they added more square footage in areas like having more and bigger ceiling rooms, more space for dressing rooms, a bigger baptistry, stuff like that. But when it came to a lot of the
temple, they robbed the proverbial Peter to pay the proverbial Paul.
I'm not saying that at all, but if you want to say that,
that's what I heard.
That's
what I heard.
But it was cool. I mean, they do have parking, huge garage, which surprised me, underneath the temple. I'm assuming that's for the meeting house next door as well. Otherwise, I can't see how on earth they would need it for the temple all the time.
You sound like a deacon visiting a guy that just worked for Vivint. The garage was huge, bro, and it was awesome. Chandeliers. Amazing.
I will say this, though. It's been a while since I've been to an open house. I think I've only been to two other open houses in my life. Newport Beach, before that was dedicated, and I went to San Diego when I was younger. Well, I don't remember much about that.
I was at that San Diego open house, Jeff.
Yeah? Maybe we were there together.
Like a family.
That's what precursor to now. And I don't remember a lot of the details, but I remember going on Monday. It felt a little organizationally weird. They kind of had us kind of, before we even went in the temple, really zigzagging all over the place. And then I felt bad for the sister missionaries when they take you upstairs and make you watch a movie about temples. You know, the pitch, basically.
Wait, why do you feel bad about that?
I couldn't tell if maybe, I don't know if they're calling sister missionaries to serve in the sort of visitor center that they've built next to the temple, if they'll have visitor center missionaries or what the situation was. They were either very, very green or just awkward people. I don't know what it was. But both of them seemed extremely...
That, by the way, that's a fun game to play in your normal wards as you interact so with male and female missionaries.
The only reason I feel bad about it is it's great that they're serving, of course, and the Lord takes care of things, but the PR side of me sits there thinking like, oh man, there are a lot of non-members here doing this tour. Like, this is the first impression they're getting of Mormons and the missionaries in their temple. It's this very awkward, stilted presentation. So it's not like you're going to sit there and tell
them. How was it stilted? It's a movie that the church produces.
No. They introduced the movie. They talked for a few minutes explaining what's going on, and which should really be a pretty basic presentation before the movie, but it was like, it was painful to sit there, honestly.
They screwed up the 3 minutes before the movie?
I won't say screwed up. I will just say they perhaps did not maximize the opportunity. And I don't know if that was just general personality awkwardness, or
Jeff,
maybe they were just newer.
Jeff, you're winking right now. I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
But these are all these minor random quibbles. There weren't that many protesters, which was nice. They went out of their way to remind us that there might be people outside on the way to the temple who would want to give us literature. And we were to be reminded that those people were not representatives of the church, and nothing they gave us was sanctioned by the church. But there was only one guy out there who was trying to push some, blackened skin Cain kind of stuff on everybody. Old Curse of Cain.
Those guys.
Old Brigham Young type stuff.
They're everywhere.
Anyway, Al, I have been talking for way too much of the beginning of the show, and I like the balance to be in your favor.
I liked it.
But Philly was great. Nice to go up and see the temple. Great for them. I mean, it's really cool. They've got it right there in the middle of the city center and everything. It's pretty awesome. I mean, it's going to be neat. It's going to be dedicated here in a couple weeks. It was fun to go.
I've done nothing since we last spoke.
What?
That's not true. I've done a few things.
I find this
I'm back here in Missouri. A good friend of our family and company, Carolyn Peterson, who was a great lady out here, passed away unexpectedly. And so I flew back for her funeral. This is interesting because I realized, I don't know if you're in the same boat, Jeff, but I have not had like a good, sad funeral for probably 10 or 15 years. Like, since my great grandmother.
Oh, that we could all have, though, have a good, sad funeral.
Well, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I don't have people passing away all the time.
Right.
In my life, I've been very, very blessed to sort of not have that. And so then all of a sudden when it happens, you almost forget how to handle yourself through some of it. And do you ever watch the Jimmy Vivino or the Jimmy V when he did the ESPYs and he had cancer and was up there talking?
You're using all kinds of phrases I don't understand. I know who Jimmy
– All right. This is –
I know what the ESPYs are. I know what the ESPYs are. I'm kidding. Right.
So Jimmy V, he gives this speech. It's very famous, but he gets up and he just had something where he's like every day, if you can laugh really hard, if you can cry really hard, and if you can love somebody really a lot, he's like, that's a good day. That's living life to its fullest. Just find a way to do that every day. And so to get to sort of sit with some sadness for the last couple of days has been a really meaningful change of pace for me. So
you haven't laughed in love is what you're saying.
Ladies,
you've been more subdued.
I'm available.
But really?
No, I do laugh and love. This weekend I went up. I'm dating a girl right now, and we were going to go to Banff in Canada.
You didn't tell me you were going to go all the way to Banff originally.
I was on my way, Jeff. I was on my way, and then I got this call. So we stopped around Cards, and we had some friends up there. This great old fella named Monty, who works on the Alaskan pipeline and has stories of polar bears hunting you.
Where was Monty when we were in Cardston like 4 years ago?
No, he was there, Jeff. Now, if I took you to Cardston, I've got hookups.
You have a network now. You have a network now in Cardston. Oh, okay, good.
It's amazing. It's amazing. I love it. And I helped Monty move some cows. He needed a giant Missourian to help him move some. And so he owes me. I mean, I've got a place at his table till I die, I think. But, it was a lot of fun. We got to hang out with some cool people and eat some delicious food. I got my 9 servings of poutine in. I was very happy.
Very good. Very good.
So that's a successful Labor Day, if you ask me.
So you just went to Cardston?
Southern Alberta. I was in, I stayed in Waterton and I stayed in Glacier. Kind of camped around, tried to hike around a little bit. It hailed on me. So when you start, the weather's wonderful. You get up the mountain where you go and hike to some lakes. It will hail on you and soak your pants.
That's what happens in them.
You wish that you had a big coat.
Yeah, the mountains do. So you ignore most of the warnings about mountain hikes that you're supposed to be prepared for inclement weather.
I brought a stick in the event that a cougar would attack us, Jeff. Sure, so I felt like I was pretty prepared. But everything else I did neglect, yeah.
Was Logan Pass all the way open? Did you get to go to the top?
That was cool to drive that whole thing. So I went in the west entrance and came out at St. Mary's. Apparently, St. Mary's Falls had a big fire there and burned up. So the hike that we did the last time we were there, no one can do at the moment.
Oh, how sad. That was a fun hike. I enjoyed that.
It was a great hike, man. That whole adventure, the bro trip – that was documented while we traveled, if I remember correctly. What a great time that was. And now, look at us. We all stuck together. Me, you, and old Brock. The whole team.
Oh, the Barry.
What do you do? I love
man trips. That sounds awesome, dude. I love Pacific, I was going to say the Pacific Northwest, but no, just up there in the Northern Mountains and the Rockies. That's a great area. It's a great area.
I'm convinced the Glacier/Waterton and it's got to be in the top 3 places I've ever been in the world. And I've been to some cool places.
Yeah, you have.
But I put that right up there. I put it up there.
How does it – you went to – what's it called? You've been there in New Zealand, right? Was that Milford Sound or something?
Oh, the Milford Sound. Yeah, that would definitely be up in the top 3
up there
as well. I would put that. I'd put the other one. And then either something like Havasupai Falls or the – Waimea Canyon on Kauai. I mean, one of those. It's just some of that like awe-inspiring, wonderful place.
I like it.
Stuff.
I like it. You've done good things.
You know?
I'm happy for you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Meanwhile, I'm in Fayetteville. So tomorrow maybe I'll go to – tomorrow I'll see what's going on at the Waffle House.
You know, oh, my gosh. Dude, that's $7.49 breakfast. You can't get the waffle? Get the waffle. You might add chocolate chips if you're feeling crazy, or pecans. The pecan waffle is tremendous. And then also I get the white bread toast, some hash browns, eggs over medium, bacon. Oh, Jeff, if you get to Waffle House tomorrow, you have beat me.
It's across the street from my hotel, literally.
I'm not kidding. That is one of my favorite places to eat. I wish I could review everyone and bring that average Yelp score up to like 3 instead of 1.1.
I think it would take a lot of work to bring it up to 3. But anyway, yes, very good. Very good. Good all around. Huzzah.
We have Mormon things. Let us tell you of Mormon things.
Allegedly. I mean, if you want. Take us there, Al. Take us to something Mormon-y that you have enjoyed.
My favorite. And I only got to read a half a chunk of this, but Evan McMullen's Veep selection. We love Evan McMullen. We love Evan. But still, so he puts in a placeholder. He's filling out his ballots. He's like, we got to get somebody in there. We got to, and they're like, who's your VP? And he's like, nobody. And they say, you got to have somebody. He's like, I choose this random man named Nathan Johnson. Nathan Johnson's my guy, which is, just some random. I'm assuming it's his college roommate or something. Like, I would put Jeff Openshaw's mind just in case. And then they're like, all right, that's it. You can no longer change it. He's like, wait, I don't even like Nathan Johnson. I don't know who this man is. And, so he's stuck with some random on 8 of the 9 ballots that he's on right now, which is great.
So, and the sad thing is the states are saying that he's stuck with it. And they, like, even if he picks another running mate, like that, they can't vote for that individual. In the state, and maybe future ones they can if he picks somebody. But how has that even worked? Like, if you have a running mate, can he be on the ballot with him and Nathan Johnson in one state and just be on the ballot with somebody else in a different state? Can you have different VP candidates per state? Is that allowed?
No, like if Hillary Clinton was in the middle of this and she was like, wait a minute. I actually, you know, this is the wrong choice for vice president. Who's her guy? Tim somebody?
Well, that's what I'm saying. She could drop Tim Kaine and they'd change it. But I'm saying Hillary can't run and say, you know, I want Tim Kaine on the ballot in these states. But in these other states, I want
Bernie. She'd just be like, hey, I'm choosing Joe Biden. Joe Biden's going to come back in as my VP.
Oh, we can only wish. We can only wish.
And, dude, I'm not kidding. I spent about an hour just on YouTube searching for creepy Joe Biden videos. There are some wonderful ones.
I know. Have you
Great
seen them?
Creepy Joe Biden.
One of my favorite Joe Biden photos is the one when he's in a diner and he's sitting with some bikers and like the biker woman's on his lap and he's whispering in his ear.
Hey, pretty baby, let me whisper in your ear. Yeah. No, it's tremendous.
I will miss Joe so much when he's gone.
She could just be like, yeah, I'm scrapping this other guy and I'm going with Joe. And everybody would be like, all right, whatever. As long as the main name, as long as the president is still on there.
That's what I'm saying. So they could scrap it. I'm just saying in all actuality, like leading up to the election.
It does not instill confidence, you know, when you're looking at Evan and watching him manage his vice presidentness. You need all the help you can get. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And then the McMullen camp issued a bit of a commentary on this Politico article, calling it snide, which, I mean, it is. It's kind of a snarky article, but it's kind of a funny story. So I think it's fair, the tone of the article. But they talk about saying, yeah, he's stuck with Mr. Johnson. He's like, no, anybody could replace Mr. Johnson. Mr. Johnson doesn't even have to be the vice president. He could say, I don't want to do it, even if he wins. But at the end, it still means he's stuck having the name Johnson on the ballot, as far as I know. I mean, that's that. So, I'm very excited.
Well, Mr. Strauss snidely claims. I love it.
And here's the final one. Finally, Mr. Strauss ridicules Evan McMullen's campaign for not settling on a vice president within the first 4 weeks of its existence. Here, Mr. Strauss forgets that thoughtfulness is not a vice. Haste is not a virtue. The vice presidency is not a joke. And tendentious stories like this aren't the same as journalism. You know, that's a comeback, and that's actually a very well-phrased comeback. So quotes and quotes, props to whoever wrote that.
No, they used 3 semicolons.
They used
sentence.
The word tendentious. I mean, that is...
That's mic drop. For grammar fools, this is a mic drop.
That takes guts, man. Most Americans don't ever see the word tendentious. That's the first time I've seen the word tendentious used in like 10 years. So congratulations, McMullen people.
I'm using the Chrome lookup feature, expressing or intending to promote a particular cause or point of view.
Wow. See, that's a great word to use. Tendentious. I like it.
Way to go. Way to go.
Here's one you've probably seen going around over the past week. So we see that Elizabeth Smart did an interview with Vice. And in it...
Wasn't she also on the Wall Street Journal recently? Or was I imagining that?
I think she was. The hard thing is, this original interview was with Broadly, a Vice subdomain. And everyone else has been quoting it but, and not always doing a good job actually giving Vice credit for the original interview. So it's been kind of hard to pin down the original source. But it is Vice. But she talks about, of course, you know, the terrible ordeal she's been through. But the part that's been going around that's been really interesting has been her talking about sort of the shaming culture that we have. And you might have seen headlines that say things like, you know, Elizabeth Smart is coming out against, you know, the church's teachings on purity, for example, is one that we've seen, or things along those lines. And we could get into the semantics of headlines like that at a different time if you want, because I don't think it's the church's teachings. It's just the stupid things we do as humans and the way we go about trying to teach virtue. So I like that she is going after this stuff, because she's talking about how, you know, she sat there even after she was rescued in meetings, and she had one of the classic terrible virtue lessons. It wasn't a chewed gum one. I forget what the actual – I should find the actual
– nail in the fence or something.
Yeah. I mean, the stuff that, like – it's got to be so hard when you are a survivor of being sexually violated – to not feel filthy and dirty in the first place, even though it's not your fault. So when we sit here and as fallible humans try to present and sell virtue in the way of just of trying to say stuff like that, yeah, you're chewed gum, you've got a nail, oh, the bubble has burst, whatever bad metaphor you want to use. Oh, I think they used the stick of gum one was the lesson she was in.
We've actually – Jeff, you and I have been over this a couple of times, right? It's a challenge because I understand the intent of people with that, of trying to say, hey, don't do this. It's not worth coming back. You know, it's the sin now, repent later sort of mentality of youth that you're trying to battle and saying, hey, listen, this is a lot more serious than you give it credence for. The challenge is that in today's culture, like this purity image or I guess purity doctrine, it affect, like if you come in as a non-member and then you join the church, but you've had sex before, you know, the idea that there are people out there dating that would be, shocked and repulsed by the idea that you had a past, that you had a history, and that you had actually used the atonement to get back to where you were, and that would make them run. I think that's the bigger problem. That's, in our church culture, right?
And I think that's almost a secondary issue. That's a whole like different issue in this case too. That's terrible, because if someone joins the church, like I would expect people to have had experiences and such before they found the gospel.
Well, right? or if you join the church at 8 and then have a rebellious teenager,
sure.
Or you struggle with your testimony at 25, or you fall in love with a guy and reason your way into having sex at 30. Like any of these are all scenarios that are very personal to somebody that we do not see as like indicative of their eternal worth. And it's the same problem that we have in a lot of places in the church. We glory the returned missionary and don't know how to preserve the offering of an early return missionary. We glory the person that you know, never had sex and got married in the temple, but we don't know quite what to do with the person that didn't get it all right every single time, or got it right in ways that other person did not, but didn't get it right in some of these other ways. We don't know how to honor that and say, you're still great. Like you did you're a great person and we love you. And like, we understand how to love you because of X, Y, and Z.
And the other thing that frustrates me with this is if we are actually approaching people who are survivors of sexual assault and trying to conflate that with the concept of like you losing your virginity. You know, if you're sitting in these things saying you are chewed gum, you are whatever metaphor you want, and because you are losing your virtue. You're someone who has had sex with someone else, and you're hammering another nail every time you do that. And if they're actually daring to present that, it's one thing, these are stupid in the first place, but it's one thing to do it to presumably a room full of virgins whom you are trying to maintain chaste.
No, you never know.
Right?
You can't know.
Right? No, but what I'm saying is it's one thing to do it under the assumption of people willfully doing things and sexually exploring. But it's a whole other thing if you're telling a rape survivor and trying to say like, hey, you had sex. I don't personally view someone who's a rape survivor and say you had sex. You didn't have sex. You got raped.
No, that's not. Think about it, Jeff. This is some old lady in a room that probably doesn't. I mean, thinks she's standing up for Jesus as she says.
Of course she does.
Right?
All the people who do. A lot of the. I mean, plenty of people have good intentions, but still do things poorly. It doesn't mean we should just say, "Hey, they have good intentions," and let that be that. And I agree with you. It is somebody who's just thinking they're doing the right thing. But I mean, you and I agree that this approach is outdated and wrong.
Well, the approach is, I think that's a perfect way of describing it. But it's not wrong because there's a rape survivor sitting in the room. It's wrong because it's wrong.
Well, I'm saying it's wrong because it's wrong, but I think it's extra wrong if we try to actually, if you're daring to talk to a rape survivor and even equate what happened to them.
No,
to,
what I'm saying, to, I'm saying there's a good chance. I mean, maybe she doesn't even know, right? Like
oh yeah, no, but that's a different thing.
I see what you're saying, though.
I mean, but who
I'm saying
didn't know
it's
who
dumb
Elizabeth
to,
Smart? Who didn't know who Elizabeth Smart was at that time?
I wouldn't know her from Adam if she was sitting in the same room as me. I would have no idea.
If she was in your class and you're a young women's teacher, I guarantee you know who she is. And if the bishop was not on top of that and realizing that for
Jeff,
9 months,
you don't know how
girl,
careless I am with the people that I lead.
You don't lead anybody right now. You have no calling.
I don't know names.
You have no calling.
I don't know faces. I remember nothing. Nothing.
I hope you're a bishop someday. And then you
so
can
I did have – Well, I had two things in this article that I actually
okay.
I don't necessarily like how the article starts out. It's like, in her spacious Park City home, this Elizabeth Smart. I'm like, all right, come on, all right, whatever. The other thing that I was curious about is Elizabeth Smart says the primary reason that Mormon women are very reluctant to identify as a feminist. is that it is explicitly taboo in the culture. The church explicitly considers feminists to be enemies. Do you believe that?
I mean, I will say that the church has very officially, of course, been on the other side of feminist movements. The church level was against the Equal Rights Amendment. Obviously, ordained women stuff has been a no-no. I don't know that I've – I'm sure there have been statements by general authorities, probably especially in the 60s and 70s, decrying, you know, the works of so-called feminists. I don't think you'd see that directly now, but I'm trying to think if we have like an official church-level takedown of feminism, period.
Unofficial, right? Because, I mean, in this article, this lady, the interviewer, Molly, was trying to – she kept trying to label Elizabeth Smart. She's like, so you're a feminist. And she's like, hey, I'm for a lot – you mm-hmm. know, like I'm a married wife with kids and I love this role. I don't think I'm the traditional feminist, but I agree. Like I don't believe in the glass ceiling and I'm – you know, I'm trying to help women's, you know, like rights and their – this action that supports them and helps them have a voice, absolutely. But I don't know that I'm a feminist per se,
yeah.
Because there's a spectrum, and you know, her reluctance to go into this, she identified as that the church was, you know, the church didn't like feminism, and I don't know. I haven't gotten. I mean, me, male, middle-aged white guy, has not gotten the impression that that feminism. Whatever.
No.
30. You stupid.
Sorry.
You know what I mean? I've not gotten the impression that feminism is offensive to the church or that people feel like they're not allowed there if they are feminists.
I don't know if not allowed, but I would say I think culturally the concept of feminism carries with it perhaps negative connotations. Not deservedly at all, but I think that's I would say that's the case. The church at large, a lot of people view the because feminism, especially I think when Mormons
is it culture or is it church?
I think it's more a little more culture, definitely. I do think, of course, there are doctrinal things. There's the Family Proclamation. There are, of course, areas where you're looking at the ideal equal but different roles of husbands and wives and such. And of course, there are some aspects of feminist movements that would potentially run up against that. But I think a lot of it is cultural in that feminist, the word, has a certain connotation that I think, especially in the church, people inevitably assume means someone who is more caustic and perhaps belligerent about the feminism. I don't think when we think feminism in a Mormon context, most people think of it being just kind of a person who is just sort of calmly going about advocating women's issues. I think it's usually comes off as someone who's a bit more of a firebrand and is trying to run up against against church teachings and policy and what have you. People think feminist, they think of Kate Kelly, right? People think feminist, they don't think of Nyland McBain, for example, who are both feminists, right, but very different, but cut from very different cloth. And sadly, I wish people could think that feminist is more of a Nyland McBain thing. And because you can see Elizabeth Smart probably is a feminist in that she cares about advocating for women, but she's afraid to use the label because of what it means to so many church members.
Well, I wonder if that's more of what it means to church members, or that it's been adopted by extremists in the feminist movement as well. I mean, like, that's a great way to articulate that spectrum, right? Of like, there's this very positive. Well, I mean, I don't know. It's this realm of like, you can either be, you know, the what we think of when we say feminists as the 70s out at Berkeley, like just angry to be angry sort of people, or you can think of them as like people that are advocating and pushing for change or better opportunities, or that to help women understand that their opportunities out there, or like just to highlight some of the options there, things like that, I think are very, very positive things in that feminist movement. But I don't know.
Absolutely.
Neither you nor I are qualified to talk about this in the least, but it's fun to conjecture.
That's also 100% true. We should probably have some of our feminist friends back on the show to talk with a more informed perspective.
Hey, you've got one. Never mind. Go for
okay.
It.
So here's a fun, silly one from LDS Living, Jana Lee Rossner at LDS Living. 8 surefire ways to spot a Mormon Disneyland. Yes.
Wait,
sir.
Did you at any time in this reading, did you chuckle or find it amusing or helpful?
Maybe the second one, slightly amusing. No chuckling, or chortling for that matter. Finding it useful, yes and no. Because as a veteran, as an experienced
professional. Do you know this woman? Do you know Jana Lee Rossner?
No, of course I don't know Jana Lee. But I have definitely played the Mormon spotting at Disneyland game. So in that sense, it was of interest. Because it's, you can pick them out. You just know.
I'm just wondering.
You just know.
This seems like such a stupid article. I'm wondering why it would.
Lots of kids. Here, so she's got a few ways, 8 ways you can do it. Some of them, lots of kids. Maybe. Layered clothing is one thing, but I think just general modest clothing is a giveaway. When you see women in knee-length jean shorts at Disneyland, it gets you thinking. But what I inevitably look for if I'm Mormon spotting is you look for the garment line on women. That's how you tell. That's always the ringer right there. Because if a woman's
the garment line on women?
Women's garments on the back either have a swoop that comes up, you know, just beneath the collar area, or it does the trapezoidal thing, which is an even bigger giveaway. You can see that because inevitably at Disneyland, women are pretty much wearing T-shirts. You know, just for convenience and comfort and stuff. So you can always, always, always make out the line from that. Just as like, you know, if you're wearing shorts or
you're
jeans.
Like, you're like a Perry Mason.
I really
How do
am.
You figure this out?
It's very, that's the, you might suspect and then you look for
you,
that.
You ogle women and that's how you know.
I ogle nobody but my wife. Let us be clear. No ogling.
That's not what I heard.
And then the other giveaways, BYU logos on stuff. Well, yeah, I mean, hello.
Dumb.
It's not like a non-member is going to be wearing a BYU shirt.
There's yeah, keep going. Stuff. Keep going.
Fanny packs.
Dumb.
No, I don't think
keep
that's
going.
A giveaway. Family reunion t-shirt.
Dumb.
I don't think we have a monopoly on that one. Unexpected foreign language skills. I don't really go around Disneyland
Dumb.
And randomly see white people from Utah speaking in tongues. And
no, when you go to like, isn't there like a Mexico land and you're like, hola, I'm
yes,
here.
They all go to Mexico land.
Then you go to like the Navajo Indian reservation in Disneyland and you're like, tintak, hak tak tak.
Mormon jewelry, I mean, I guess that's a giveaway. If I notice someone wearing a CTR ring, I might think, well, I wonder what church they're from. So that's kind of fair. EFY lanyards, I never see those at Disneyland.
Dumb.
That's
this is such
crap.
A dumb article. This is the worst article.
Maybe I should leave a comment like that. Anyway, this was an exciting article. Most of it's a lie. Just follow my tips, folks. You look for a family. You look for knee-length shorts. You look for a garment line. You move on.
The knee-length shorts. Knee-length denim shorts with a single roll. That's how you know.
Oh, the single roll is usually a good one, too. That's how you tell. You know, we stick out. We wear rather simple clothing when we're at the parks. I can tell. If any of you don't believe me, next time I go to California, we can have a twin meetup at Disneyland, and I will walk you through the park, and we will find the Mormons. It'll be like Pokemon Go. We'll find Mormons.
I hate LDS living more every time.
I hate so much.
Our show is effectively making fun of LDS living and Peggy Fletcher Stack. Like, if we could do that, we could just show up and do that every week and be like, and another Peggy Fletcher Stack story.
Well, and McKay.
And here's LDS and living.
Yeah.
And McKay is just a nod to the past at this point, Jeff.
He kind of is. He's basically just serves to be our Trump basher. I mean, that's what he's there for.
Well, it's because Trump caught him ogling his wife, and nobody likes an ogler. Okay, so let's see. The Mormon Church reassigning missionaries in Russia. This is happening. So people that are on their way to Russia in the MTC, there's 30 missionaries in the MTC that got reassigned to other Eastern Europe.
Are you serious?
Or Russian-speaking missions. Yes, this is real.
At least they're still speaking Russian.
Yeah, for the most part. Or
I mean, they didn't get reassigned to Pocatello or anything. Like, they still get to, you know, have a Russian-speaking experience.
Could you imagine? Because I remember being 18 or 19, and you get that call, and then you're just instantly so cocky. You're so cocky. And then in the MTC, they're like, oh, actually, we're not going to send you to Russia anymore. Now you're going to Des Moines. And they're like, wait, what? All those people that I told were sexually impure, now I've got to go and join them in teaching the gospel?
I do have a friend who served in the Tri-Cities in Washington, and he actually went Russian-speaking. So you can still serve Russian-speaking stateside. I bet if you serve over in Brighton.
We had a missionary that went to Wisconsin that was Russian-speaking.
Yeah, so it happens, of course. But that's not a temporary thing, right? They're not saying, hey, you're going to hang out in Latvia until we sort this out. They're just being reassigned to somewhere else where they speak Russian.
That's right. That's right.
Wow. So it starts, huh? That's it.
So it begins.
Goodbye, missionaries in Russia.
They cite that the need in Russia is declining.
Yeah, that's not surprising. We wondered about this with the whole volunteer thing. So
those who will serve in Russia will focus on supporting the church and its members, and on engaging the community in humanitarian service, not preaching the gospel.
Basically, what I think we're going to see is most of the missionaries serving in Russia will be actual Russians. That's what we're going to see. So the numbers will drop.
Yeah, that was Spencer W. Kimball's vision.
That's true. That was his plan all along, right? No, for nobody to go abroad and have an experience. They would just be with their own people. What do you think about that? Like, is that the ideal, or is there so much value in what you derive from 2 years with the people who are foreign to you? And because it really can change your life. Is there so much value in that, or is it really better to locals with locals?
No, 100%. Dude, if you could go to a place where you already spoke the language, you would have – your mission would be infinitely more meaningful to you. I promise.
Well, okay. Like, so by that token, if you're an American guy and you go and serve stateside somewhere else English speaking, is that inherently of more value to you then? Do you think those people have better experiences?
Yeah. Like, I remember being 9 months in and barely being able to share my testimony. I mean, Ukrainian was hard. That was a hard language for me.
It's a hard language.
And so, you know, I remember just being in the middle of this and being like, dude, you punks that can just open your mouth and bare your testimony, how dare you ever complain about anything? Like, I'd give anything to just be able to speak to these people. And you know, like, if you're a Russian and you get called to, you know, what are some of those other Russian countries? Georgia, for instance. That's a joke. Just kidding.
People do still know Russian in Georgia. But, you know, you could be called to Kazakhstan. You could be called to Ukraine. You could be called to the Baltics.
But you go there speaking Russian, right?
Yeah.
And you fall – I mean, it's a different – people. Literally in America. So if I'm from Missouri. If I got called to serve in New York City – right. That's a new culture. It's a new people. I've got to learn to love them. All that stuff is still there. The exact same. Just because the language isn't there.
But you can talk to them out the gate.
I find a lot of value in being able to have 2 full years of bearing testimony instead of 1 year of bearing testimony, half a year of almost bearing testimony, and 6 months of having no idea what you were doing.
Should they go back to the old model when foreign missions went for 3 years instead of two?
Absolutely.
Could you imagine, man, a 3-year mission? That'd be crazy.
I would have loved a 3-year mission.
I guess
once you're there, you finally figure it out. You got an idea what you're doing.
I know. Year three, you can be just crushing it. You're one of them.
And we would have crushed it.
I mean, I've seen the other side of heaven. He was basically Tonkin by the end. Dude knew what he was doing.
Yeah. Kolipoki.
I guess I can see both sides of this. Like, I cannot fathom my life having not spent 2 years in Spain. Like, I cannot in any way even get there in my head, right? I mean, and so much of my professional career has stemmed from experiences I had in Spain, too. So, but I can, of course,
but
see
why
the value
not just go live there, go study there? Encourage youth to go and, like, work for 2 years in a foreign country.
Well, that could be fine, but then I'd be going there for 2 years in a foreign country and serving a two-year mission, and I would basically never be going to college and starting my life, right?
I'm not opposed to that. I actually think that's the right way to do it.
I think you get one gap year. We should embrace the gap year more in the U.S. It's a big thing in British culture.
Jeff, have I shared with you my philosophy on formal education?
Was this part of your wonderful website, Hard Knock MBA? Is this one of your articles there?
Yeah.
I would love
to hear. No, this is where anything formal education, you just say, screw it. I'm just going to go and live a great life, and that's what I'm going to do.
So that's
it
what
works
I should
way better. I mean,
so never mind that I work in an industry that is extremely credential-based. I would just be like, guys, I've lived stuff, okay? I have lived stuff. And they'd be like, that's great. What have you published?
This is the great question, right? Like, could I walk into your industry and sell myself into a better job than you've got based on the fact that, like, I've just done more interesting things?
Okay, first of all, that's under the assumption that you've done more interesting things.
Fair.
And let's mind you, I'm married. But I'm knowing married, I have a kid, so
yeah, that's actually pretty good.
But
knowing my ability to sell, could I go in there with no credentials and still get a meaningful position? Do you think?
Do you want to pull a prank on my company, like, and apply for an open job and just see what happens? And then
absolutely.
you can turn them down in the end, but I'd actually love to see you put this in action and see what happens. It would crack me up.
All right, I'm doing it.
Okay, so an open role would probably just be for like an analyst or something like that. So I'll keep my ears to the ground.
Jeff, I'm a successful businessman. I can't just be an analyst.
Do you want to be a Java developer?
I would like to run your company.
I will do something nice for you that will be named later. If you will write a full-blown letter and call and try to explain to the owners of my company why you should be running the show instead of the person who currently is, I would pay money. I would do all kinds of things to see this go through. Please do.
Yeah, you had me at pay me money. Absolutely. Okay.
I will pay you some money, usually in the form of non-valued currency. Something that's useless.
Oh, that sounds sophisticated.
Like, okay. I'll give you like Slovenian tolars or something like that.
You must have learned about this in your college days. I don't know.
Look, no, I learned about Slovenian currency just traveling in Slovenia. So there you go. I spent time there and I learned everything I needed to know. So that holds up for me.
I have Hungarian currency, which is still in use.
You still have your 4-inch? Yeah, I've got a bunch of those too. Quick mention. So we rededicated finally the Freiburg Germany Temple. The Freiburg Temple, of course, one of the coolest ones in church history because it was paid for by the East German government back in the day as a means to keep East Germans from repeatedly attempting to get visas to go to Switzerland to go to the temple.
Wait, what? They paid for it?
The Freiburg Temple has got such a cool history. It was built before the Frankfurt Temple. It was I think to this point, the only temple built in an actively communist country. I can't think of another one that's been put in an actual communist state. So the East German government was, as I said, getting weary of people always trying to get permission to go to Switzerland to go to the temple among the Latter-day Saints. So they kind of came to the church and were like, what if you put one of your temples here so our East Germans would quit trying to leave East Germany, right? And so the East German government provided the labor.
Wait, we built a wall and got Mexico to pay for it.
So. In a sense, we did very well with this. I don't remember if we did all materials and labor or what the exact arrangement was, but it was a very austere temple, very simple temple. The build quality was much lower than what we typically had in temples, but we built a temple in East Germany. And so it's been there since the 80s. It's undergone a couple of renovations, and it just had a reasonably extensive one that ended. And I'm sure you can imagine, which general authority do we send to Germany to rededicate a temple? Could it possibly be Quentin L. Cook? Is he the one? No, sir.
No. It's the German.
It is the German. So Uchtdorf got to traipse about his old stomping grounds and rededicate the Freiburg Temple.
After he seems closed happy. For a year.
Yeah, so it serves, you know, members in Germany, Czech Republic, Poland, Moldova, Romania, and Hungary. I'm surprised Moldova is not part of the Kyiv district. I didn't realize that.
I thought. It's like 9 hours away.
Maybe they shifted it. I don't know. So anyway, great job, President Uchtdorf. Freiburg is back online. Remember we talked about this a while ago. They closed Frankfurt and Freiburg, leaving a huge chunk of the church in Europe not in close proximity to one of their temples. So now Freiburg's back online. Good for them.
We're back in the game.
Yeah.
Did you see the Louisiana governor giving some love to the helping hands in helping with the Louisiana floods?
My understanding is he
I have no doubt God sent you here. He said, just like in that, I am a child of God, and he has sent me here. Mm-hmm. I have no doubt that God sent you here. He loves us. Thanks, Louisiana governor.
Good for us.
Dale Murphy is the governor there now.
Dale Murphy?
The
Mormon baseball player?
Yeah. Steve Young is the governor.
Ty Detmar is the governor. That's a BYU football player.
Detmer.
I thought it was Detmer, and then I don't try.
Hey, don't. You're fine.
I don't try hard enough. People, you know, BYU played this weekend. Everybody was really excited, and it's like now it's that time of year when I have to fake like I care about it just to fit in the elders' quorum that I run. Do you know how much I feel like I feel like such an outsider. I'm like a refugee in my own quorum. I'm the one setting the tone there, and I can't control it. It's very sad. It's very sad.
That's real.
So here's an article at Leading LDS that Al has decided he wants to make fun of, but I'm going to bring it up because that's what I'm going to do. So what if all church programs that compelled service were abolished? So to set it up, what we're talking about here are whether the ongoing official ones we have, like home teaching, visiting teaching, what have you, or anything you might come up with. The author here had some ideas and ways to try to get the members to do service and do things once a week and choose any day of the week, you know, to get out in the ward and find people and take names and find out who people were. I've seen this in my own ward where we're trying to, you know, find the addresses of people we don't know and this and that. And they do an effort, but inevitably people just don't pick up on the effort. They don't care. And, you know, you find that you spend a lot of effort trying to pump them up to do it. And eventually these programs kind of trickle away and die. I think we've all seen they'll fade away and, with church programs. It happens all the time. It just kind of just stops. So what if we just got rid of the programs, Al? You're a believer in getting rid of home teaching. You've got on the record saying that, haven't you?
That I believe in getting rid of home teaching?
Yeah, you said on this show that you think we should get rid of home teaching, not even hypothetically, that we should just get rid of it, that it doesn't work and we should just ditch it. You've said that. Do you stand by your comment?
I said it just like that, but yes.
Verbatim. I quoted you exactly just now from something you said like 3 years ago.
Wow, that's pretty good. I am against being home taught person. I think home teaching for people that need it is a great tool.
Well, and as the handbook says, allocate your resources accordingly with home teaching. I mean,
well, here's the deal though: if we abolish all service programs,
service programs.
So is this talking about like you're an elders' quorum and they say we'd like somebody to come help Sister Johnson move? And we're not leaving until somebody raises their hand.
No, I think it's more like the full-blown programs. Like, getting somebody to move is one thing. That's more ad hoc. But I think it is saying, look, home teaching doesn't work. In an ideal world, we all take care of each other anyway and don't need a program to do it. So what would happen if we just got rid of these? What if we didn't make people feel compelled to serve and drop stuff and left it open to just hope that the Spirit would compel people and help them want to do it on their own with no need for reporting and blah, 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 and all that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
I would love not to report things. I'd be so happy not to do reports.
So what do you think? Do you think the overall activity in the church or the people's connection to the church, does that improve or diminish with this?
do program.
So like if home teaching is a fine example. Home teaching and visiting teaching, that goes away completely. Is anybody's life impacted for the worse?
Some might be. What I have found is there are people
then it's not worth it.
Exactly. There are people in the church who I've met many times who kind of will drift a bit on their attendance, and they're specifically and willfully and consciously doing it to see if members will reach out to them if they care about them. I've seen this many times. It's interesting.
Really?
Yeah. I've seen it a lot. There are people who just have – that's just kind of how their emotional chemistry is, and they almost want to kind of test the ward out and see if the ward cares enough to find them when they deliberately let themselves be lost, and they want to see if the church is going to find them in a way. And home teaching, when done correctly, would thwart situations like that. When not done, it only reinforces the people's idea or the individual's idea that the ward doesn't care about them. And I don't think it's just by any means, but we can't control the way everybody reacts to everything. I just have to, you know, play the hand we're dealt. So in that sense, I do think there's good value in being diligent with the home teaching. But in doing it, I could see an argument to say, don't just say, hey, we need to home teach like the active families who are going to receive them and the people who need it. Like, really focus in. Decide if some active families actually need home teachers. And if not, allocate the resources where they need to go.
I like the idea of not making it a uniform thing. I really like the idea of service. Like, so here's what needs to happen is if the church programs became more focused on serving those that need service and less about this. I mean, it would be amazing if people could just follow the Spirit. It's like how missionary work has had to evolve, right? Back in the day, we had the six discussions. Then it turns into Preach My Gospel. And if you were doing the six discussions right, you were already doing Preach My Gospel. I really believe the same thing. If we were doing home teaching right, we're already doing home teaching as assigned by the Spirit. And like, not everybody should be home taught, probably.
Yeah.
Right? Like, please, I mean, check in with me every 6 months but do it on assignment. Somebody in the elders quorum needs to have me on a calendar and say, all right, hey, it's been 6 months. Will somebody grab Al and take him to dinner and just see how he is? We don't need to go see him every month. We're just going to check in with him now and then. And we're going to count that as, I mean, if you need numbers around it, that's full home teaching, right? Like that's what needs to happen. You need to know the people. And when I got assigned as a home teacher, when I first got home from my mission, I had a great elders quorum president, Jacob Lottie, assigns me. He pulls me into a room and he says, Hey, listen, I've got two families that I need you to go and check on. One, here's her deal. She's new here. Doesn't really have any friends. She needs somebody. If you could just make sure that she every Sunday before she comes to church, like just shoot her a text, let her know that you're looking forward to seeing her on Sunday. And like, let me see if you can, if she needs a ride or anything like that, just check on her. Here's the one other person. She's in this situation. She's in a relationship with a boyfriend, and you know, he's kind of pulling her away a little bit. And I mean, just be there so that she can have a good example of a priesthood leader. And, like, be around. Just check in with him. You know, you don't have to do anything crazy. See if you can meet him, and then just be a presence there. And that meant so much to me because he sent me on an assignment to go and do a thing, and I went and found these people and like loved them, and it was great, and it was very easy for me to participate in that. If that was how home teaching was being assigned and managed, we would love it. We'd absolutely
and,
love
and
it.
I think you hit on something very useful there. And I'm sorry, this is only about home teaching, but I think we could apply this to, you know, a number of areas. I think the problem is the programs in the church are good, but oftentimes we need to help people know how to maximize them. Like, so often in the church we give assignments, but then we don't explain the assignment. We just tell people to go do one thing and don't give them the tools they need. Like, I like that your president didn't just give you an assignment and say, here are your two families, here's your printout, you know, go and check in on these people. I don't know if he did this with every single person, but he sat down with you and said, this is what's going on. This is what we're looking for. This is a deliverable in that sense with these people. And I want you to be cognizant of that. And
well, I think the thing that has to change is the idea that when we get home teaching, that it's a cookie cutter that just needs to be forced onto our branch. I think that we should be able to take the programs of the church, sit down and say, all right, what makes sense here? And as a bishop or an elders quorum president, you know, be able to adjust these things and take the principles there. Now, I don't think the church trusts everybody enough to let them start doing that. We're still in cookie cutter mode, but hey, we can all join.
Well, yeah. I mean, programs exist because we're failing to do stuff on our own. I'm a big believer in that. I don't think we would have home teaching as a program if we were just taking care of ourselves and each other.
We gotta do a few more here before we get out of here. So Moroni on the DC Temple, Jeff, this is close to your home. He was retired.
It's
gone.
He was
actually replaced by –
they won't put him back.
There is now a Laban with a sword, which is very exciting.
No, they put up a Captain Moroni instead. Now it's all Title of Liberty.
That'd be great.
And then another statue on the other side of a Melikiah, just staring at
him. He's like 40 years old, and so they retired him, and they're polishing him up. He'll go back up in a while. So
it's kind of cool, though. Right now, I guess I've seen some pictures from friends I know. The temple's been closed while they do this, by the way. They didn't just take him off while the temple doesn't open up for a couple more weeks. But the Moronis, they built kind of a little shack or something around him to clean him. But from my understanding is he's just kind of there, right there on the property near the parking lot. Because I had some friends who were over helping to clean the temple, and Moroni was just chilling, and they got to take pictures of it and stuff. So I might have up there and see if I can't hang out with the old boy, flying angel and such, you know?
The best.
Yeah. I don't really have any other major mentions, Al. I'm okay with calling it if you are.
Church donated $2 million in refugee aid. That's big.
Yeah, and there's some weird thing I don't understand about they're changing the approach to email addresses for church leaders. I guess before you had to have if you're a stake president, you had like a church-issued email address.
No, there were position email addresses that the church used for a while.
Yes, and that was all goofy and it was a mess. So now they want you to go in and clean up your email accounts associated with your LDS accounts, and then that will just be what they use for the messaging. They're trying to
brace yourselves. Emails are coming. That's what they're saying.
All right. That's my main Jeff, business right there. That's it.
Also, everybody, you should email us, contact@thisweekinmormons.com. We will love to have you, or visit thisweekinmormons.com, and we will be happy to chat with you there.
Please, everybody, comment on this episode over on our Facebook page or at thisweekinmormons.com and tell us what you think about the stuff we've talked about today. Also, we encourage you to leave a review on iTunes or whatever service you use to stream this show or download it. We would appreciate that. And join us on the other social media channels that we use as well. We always enjoy engaging with you and appreciate your participation. So, once again, from the Valley of the Everlasting Hills, or whatever we say, we will bid you adieu. Al, you take care. And everybody.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you. This Week in Mormons is out. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
To follow me down this little hall.